Welcome to Veterans Connected, where maintenance and reliability expert and military veteran Eric Bevavino connects with fellow veterans in industry during each episode, where they exchange their experiences and discuss the transition from the military to industry and the paths and resources that led them to where they are today. The Veterans Connected podcast is proudly produced by the industry's leading network and learning community, Mobius Connect. Eric, over to you.
Hi, I'm Eric Bevavino, host of the Mobius Connect podcast, focused on connecting military veterans to the maintenance and reliability community. Our aim here is to bridge the understanding gap between the military and civilian worlds, thereby improving the veteran transition experience and ultimately providing hope and a helping hand to any of our brothers and sisters out there struggling to find their way. We'll do this by interviewing veterans who have successfully made it through. For this session, we have the distinct pleasure and honor of a second interview with one such Marine Corps veteran, Butler Fuquay, who sat with us about a year ago. Butler's podcast was one of the most downloaded to date, and if you haven't listened to it, I highly recommend you do. For this season, we've invited Butler back to pick up where we left off so he can share any updates or reflections on the last 12 months, as well as continued high-value guidance for vets as well as employers seeking vets. Hey, Butler, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Eric, thanks for having me, man. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, the last time we spoke, you were in Hawaii. Are you still out there in Honolulu, I think?
Yeah, I am still out here. We moved around a little bit. I'm out in a little town called Haula on like the northeastern side of the island. So good place out here. Weather's nice.
You're not ready to move back to Alabama anytime soon or come back stateside?
I don't know. We'll see. I got some family out there, you know, so, but it's hard to beat this weather. It's it was a little chilly this morning. It was like, you know, low 70s. So, you know, somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do it. Yeah. Yeah. Right on. Right on. And I've been looking forward to this. Really, Butler, as our last time together was really, really fun for me. I hope it was for you too. And we spoke in November 2023, and I see that you've posted, at least on IMDb, at least three short films. Is it two since we last spoke, or three, or is that correct?
It's hard. I don't remember how much I posted. I've made about three or four, but I have one that I've decided is the one that I'm promoting. I'm calling my debut short film the last one I made. It's called Sasquatches in Hawaii. And obviously it's a comedy, if you can tell by the title. So it's a short little film about these two guys trying to find Sasquatch in the one place nobody has looked, Hawaii. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So yeah, thanks for bringing that up. It was definitely an experience making it. I'm proud to have that my background.
Yeah, I got a kick out of it. I watched it actually before this recording, and it was a lot of fun. A lot of slapping.
Yeah. Oh, and I got to say, most of the people making that, coincidentally, are veterans. I had one guy who was like a trained filmmaker who has his own production commercial filmmaking business, and he was kind of there as my aid. The two actors are both, one of them is still active duty military. The other one's a veteran like me. And then one of the extras was a veteran, but almost everybody except for one person was like DOD related. So it was kind of cool to have like a cast and crew that mostly veteran, you know?
Nice. Very fun. Very fun. And well done. Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited to meet you on the early phases of your career here as you know, proceed to the mountaintop, and I see you in lights and war shows in the future that I'll say, I know that guy. Awesome. What else have you been up to?
I've been doing a lot of like redefining and looking inward and what I want to do in my life long term. I've started a new job since then because the nature of being a government contractor is the government contract, it ended abruptly. But I'm very blessed to have quickly found a new role that I could stay with for as long as I want, still doing government contracting with a new company. I'm onboarding with them right now, and I'm actually starting a podcast of my own on the side. So lots has happened this past year. You know, we made a move, And also I reconnected. Something happened, I don't know, in the wind or in my spirit or something the last year, where I've started reconnecting with a lot of the guys that I got out of the Marines with, and we're sharing our experiences of where we've been since we've gotten out. And
interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And Eric, it's so cool how some of these guys I have not spoke with in over 10 years, and I meet up with them, and it's like it hasn't been 20 minutes since the last time we hung out, you know, and we just pick right back up where we left off.
It's incredible how that works, right? Mm-hmm. And if I remember correctly, you served on Marine One as the detachment while you were on active duty, and you also had some time with training, dog handling training. Is that correct? Towards the end,
right.
Perhaps? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The Marine One helicopter, just to kind of recap, you know, it's a Marine Corps unit that does it, and they have their own security. And so I enlisted as military police. I got assigned to HMX-1, the Marine One helicopter squadron, and they have their own canine unit. So the last couple years I was in, I became a canine handler for that unit. And yeah, so that was my Marine Corps experience.
Yeah, and if you want to hear very entertaining stories about both those experiences, listen to the first interview that we did with Butler, and it's probably one of the reasons why it's been downloaded so frequently. But it was very thoughtful. You're an articulate, smart guy, and you, I think, joined the Marines originally to find a way to college or film school, perhaps, and to pursue that dream. Is that what you've been doing as a government contractor? Or I think you mentioned web design as well. Is it anything related to that as a contractor?
No, not directly. So for various reasons, I think I went over in the last episode, I didn't stick with that dream of pursuing filmmaking right after getting out of the Marines. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to have regrets, because I wouldn't have probably my beautiful family and children now if I would have went a different path. But I did become a software engineer, not directly. I made sure I bounced around and wasted a lot of time before I decided to become a software engineer.
So that's required in the seasons of struggle, right?
It is. Unfortunately, sometimes we just have to see like what our elastic limit is before we get on board. I don't know why we do it to ourselves. You know, I've had a lot of hard times and a lot of chaos, but all of it's self-inflicted. So I don't know who the real enemy is over here, right? Excuse me. Apologies. But yeah, I was a military police officer, a canine explosive detection handler. Then I did personal training, and then I taught myself to code, became a software engineer. But my dream is always to become a filmmaker, and now I've decided to start a podcast. So I have a lot of experience of maybe using one skill to translate to another. And if you lay it all out there at one time, all the stuff I just listed, you know, that's over the course of like 15 plus years. It's not like you can't just go do all that at once, right? And a lot of it is due to bouncing around, but some of it's strategic as well. So the work I do for the government now is not directly related to filmmaking, possibly not related at all, but it does teach me problem solving, and it's above average pay to be a software engineer. So that's nice. That can be leveraged, and it's job security. You know, at the end of the day, I want to put food on the table and have fun with my family. That if I miss that, then none of these dreams are worth it. It's pointless. If I miss that, you know what I'm saying? Then what was the point?
Yeah. Yeah. You're working to live, not living to work. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think your experiences, your whole story really can help teach a lesson that bouncing around is not necessarily a bad thing. It may take you a while to get to your perceived end state or your dream, but as long as you're learning and you're moving in a positive direction, which, you know, you're a prime example of that, the more experience you have in the variety of experience that you have makes you a more well-rounded person, and oftentimes can make you more valuable to employers or to working on your own behalf as an entrepreneur, as a filmmaker, as a podcast host, as a promoter, you know, that type of thing. So yeah, I'm interested in what the guys that and maybe men and women that you've reconnected with, how have they found their transitions, and where are they today, and you know, what you've learned in catching up with them?
That's a good question. It's actually, it's interesting how similar their situations has been. Mm-hmm. It seems to be some themes that I've noticed is we all bounced around, not knowing. Some people have made their dreams come true. They've actualized their dreams in life. Some people are in the same boat as me, to where they're finally come around. They bounced around, but they're finally kind of getting centered and are on a, you know, straight path to where they want to be in life. And others are still maybe not as far in that, but there seems to be a theme of not really knowing what to do. And some people don't even know what they want. And I know, at least for my generation, we grew up being told you can be whatever you want to be. You can do anything you want. And that's great, but it's also exhausting if you don't know what you want to do. Too many options is honestly very exhausting. So it's comforting to know that there seems to be this cliff. If you get out of the military at a certain age, like early 20s, it's or at any time, I guess, it's like you got pushed off of a cliff and emotionally and societally, because you fell down and you don't know how to get back up. You don't know which mountain to climb. They all seem worth it. They all seem too hard. But which one's going to make you happy, right? Or which one's going to work out? So one of the biggest things that I've benefited from reaching back out to my friends in the military is honestly just the community aspect of it. I mean, these guys, they're so understanding that if I can't come see them because I have a family to take care of, they're not going to hold it against me, right? If they were trying to start this thing where we meet together every once a year in a cabin in a new place or something, but there's no pressure. And at the same time, if I need any of them, they're right there for me. And so I've seen a lot of people that they're starting like a training path to a new career, like either seeking to become an apprentice or they're starting to get certifications that's going to align with like a job that they want to do long term. I've seen several people do that, to where they bounced around or they had like a temporary career since getting out of the Marines. And now they're like, you know what? I realize what I want to do. There's this program that has this apprenticeship, or there's this certification school or this trade school or a college I can go to, and I'm going to start doing that. And so we're all kind of maybe starting a little later than we would have wanted to. But I think there's a good message there in that it's not like that peculiar anymore to be in your mid 30s or older and pivot and switch gears. A lot of people are doing it. So that made me feel better. And and there's a lot of options out there. And it seems like going through a lot of mess in life somehow teaches you what you want to do, because you learn what you don't want to do, if that makes sense. So I don't know if I answered your question about reaching back out. I kind of rambled there, but
no, it's this is all great, right? So a couple key themes there, because which I haven't related, I don't believe, on this podcast yet, but I'm also going through a transition in my, you know, personal career. So it makes me smile when you say you can still do it in your 30s or your 40s, and I'm 57, right? The date of this recording, and I'm looking for my new adventure at the moment too, as a corporate refugee. You know, things happen, and you know what you sign up for when you join in, and you know, it's the way of the world. But retooling and reconnecting with long-term friends, whether they be in the service or they're in other jobs that you know you've been in, or even going home. I recently unfortunately had to go back due to a funeral of early passing of mutual friends of the family, and went back and reconnected. And it's so interesting the perspective that you have at the different phases of your life, and talking to the other folks that you either grew up with or you've known along the way, that have had similar right. experiences and sort of triangulating on what are the universal truths here that, you know, the humanity of helping each other out and being there for each other. And yeah, I think that's one of the things that the military does, lifelong brotherhoods. It's like you've been together the whole time and you just pick up where you left off. So that's cool. So you were these folks that you were in the Marine One unit with, or boot camp, or little both, or all the above?
It's pretty much all the people I was in the Marine One unit with. One thing that's kind of unique about that unit is most people who they want it, because of the clearance and the vetting they have to do to get you, they want to keep you for as long as possible. So a lot of Marines, if you go there for your first enlistment, you'll be there your whole enlistment. And so if you get out, that's the only unit that I was in. And so these guys that I was with, some of them PCS'd, but in other words, most of my comrades from the Marines are from that unit. Pretty much everybody I'm still in contact with was the group of people from there.
I gotcha. And segueing from the first episode of this podcast with you, where what I believe one of your comments was, just because you have all those clearances and all the accolades that go along doesn't mean you necessarily naturally have to pursue another job related to what you did in the Marines, like the Secret Service or some such thing. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was pretty insightful, though it led you to do, you know, some different odd jobs on the way, right, as you progressed. But any other key learnings from those folks, or a particular story that stuck with you that resonated or taught you something?
A friend I just reconnected with this past Saturday. I actually interviewed him for the podcast I'm starting because his story was so interesting. So I reconnected with him and I asked him if he was a cop, because I remember when he first got out, he was pursuing a job, I think in Alaska, as a state trooper or like a patrol cop. And sometimes those areas can be very competitive. So it just, for whatever reason, didn't work out. And I follow him on social media the few times that I've had social media, and I see him posting pictures from all over the world. Excuse me. One month he's out somewhere in the US hunting elk. And then next I see he's talking about he killed a gator with whatever weapon. He's on a boat, like hand wrestling these alligators. And then I'll see him post a picture of him in Africa going on safari hunts in Africa. And he's like gotten to know the local community there. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? Like, how are you making this happen? Because look, hunting is something like, if for anybody who hunts, you can spend as much money as you want. Even if you stay local to where you live, it can get very expensive. And I see him with these high dollar bows and these equipment, and he's traveling over the world. And you know, he's a good buddy of mine. And so I asked him, I said, are you a cop now? Like, what are you doing? What are you doing professionally? And he said, his response to me, which was, I don't know, sobering in a way, is he said, I was a corrections officer for 10 years, but now he's doing something else. And I thought, man, I'm just now old enough to have friends that have had like a whole nother career they started and left since we spoke last. So that was kind of sobering, to have a whole nother life since the Marines. And so there's a lot going on there, but the story that I kind of extracted from him that spoke to me is he actualized his dream of traveling the world and going to these scenic places. And, you know, he doesn't just hate animals. It's also about, it's about the nature aspect of it. You know, the feeling one with the land and traveling all this. And he made this dream happen by having a completely unrelated career. And that spoke to me because that's basically what I'm doing now. And so his story helped me realize that me becoming a software engineer and all these other side gigs I've done and all these auxiliary skills that I've built, from media management to graphic art to animation to coding, web development, software engineer, and now filmmaking, is not wasted time. I can leverage that to get the life that I want, because I have, it's different when somebody you know has done this, right? Excuse me. You could see on TV about somebody who accomplished something great, or somebody who, you know, did X, Y, and Z, but from somebody who, like, you knew them way back when, and you two were in the same place in life together, and you see them do something amazing like this, it speaks volumes to what I could do. And that's probably the most kind of like noticeable thing that I've noticed from reconnecting with my buddies from the Marines. But all the stories are like that. Like, I, another one of my friends, he he always wanted a family. I remember when we were in the Marines, he's just one of those guys that, that's, I mean, I want a family too, but he's just one of those guys that, that's just, that was a big goal of his. Even when he was a single guy, he wanted to buy a house and he wanted to get a family. And I reconnected with him. And I remember when we were in the Marines, he had like this girl that was like his friend that he would sometimes pen pal with, you know, like friend zone, haha. And sure, I'm sure no other guy can relate, right? But he gets out of the Marines and he marries this girl and he buys a house, and now he's raising a beautiful family. He's involved with their school, like their extracurricular activities. Like, he goes to their ball games and stuff like that. He's got a job doing security, and that was his dream and he made it happen. Right. And that speaks to me too. I've got another buddy who's still, he doesn't know what he wants to do, but he's at the place where he knows to get serious, and he has like the maturity and the life experience. Like this other friend of mine I'm referencing, I didn't get permission to tell their stories, so I'm not going to use personal names, but sure. He deployed after our unit, he stayed in, he reenlisted, and he deployed with the Navy SEALs and helped them out. And so he has all kinds of experience doing that. And, but now as a civilian, you know, there's not really a civilian job that necessarily translates exactly to that. But he has so much human being experience and life experience that even though he's still kind of trying to make a decision one way or the other, he's still, he knows himself well enough to know to pick something serious and stay on a path. And so just the common thread I've seen is that whether you've made your dream happen, you're still working at it, or you don't know what you want to do, we all feel confident that we're equipped to where we can make life happen. We can make life work for us. And so reconnecting with my old buddies from the Marines, I don't feel so siloed like I did before. So that sense of community has been very powerful to me.
That's interesting. And what was the name of your podcast again, Butler? Just to make sure everybody who's listening can tune in and can listen to that as well.
Oh, thanks, man. It's called Cops versus Ninjas. So,
okay, nice.
If you could tell from my short film title, I like titles that get people's attentions and that you can laugh at. And the reason it's called that is because future me will make a feature film titled Cops versus Ninjas. It's an action comedy about cops fighting ninjas. Ninjas, and it's just fun. So I thought I'll title the podcast that, and it's for guys who, not necessarily veterans, but it's for people who, you know, like support the police, like these type of topics. And basically we interview real life action heroes. So cops, veterans, firefighters, and just interesting people, martial artists, things like that. It's not live yet. I don't know when I'm going to actually publish it. But I have a website, if I could plug.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Yeah.
Thanks, man. It's just copsversusninjas.com. That's copsvsninjas.com. It's basically just a placeholder right now for you to put your email in. And if anybody wants to listen to the show, I want to wait until I can like make sure I have enough interviews to sustain it, you know, where I can keep the show going. But yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for letting me mention that.
No problem. We're here to help each other out in the community. Amen. For sure. And I think what's becoming more and more popular, and it's not just for this podcast, but really the media vehicle of interviewing folks and listening to stories, the human nature component of storytelling and how history and legacy has been transitioned over time through the vehicle of storytelling is really, really powerful. And if you put a fun spin on it or twist on it, makes it even more, a little more entertaining, gets to core messages that are important for all of us. So I love it. I love it. And you know, this theme of being able to manifest what you'd like your life to turn out to be, I think is pretty powerful as well, because there are a lot of things in this world that we can't control, but what we can't control is getting out of bed in the morning, showing up, putting one foot in front of the other.
Amen.
Bias to action, right? Which is taught in the military, not appreciated by everybody in the world for sure. But, you know, it's very, very interesting stories. I mean, you can be a corrections officer, just goes to show you could be a corrections officer for 10 years. Love that, do a great job in it. But you get connected, or and you get connected to other people in other industries that all of a sudden see who you are and know what you are looking for. And they open up a door to get you to travel around the world and, you know, shoot high powered weaponry and do what you enjoy doing and living your best life. So I think that's great. And really the messages here is reconnecting with the brotherhood or the sisterhood and understanding where folks are and, you know, seeing if that helps you get where you're going. Right. It sounds like it made an impression on you. And one of the things that I'll just offer here briefly, because this is not necessarily about me, but it's really about kind of designing your life after the military and trying to make sure you get onto a path that gets you closer towards the target and gets you along the way. And I like, you know, self-help books, and I like trying to work them out. And there are a few a lot of smart people from Stanford. They wrote this book called Designing Your Life. So it really takes an approach of brainstorming and figuring out and going through several exercises. If you're willing to commit the time, and anybody listening to this podcast, I would highly recommend it. It helped me in what I'm doing today, and I think it would help others too. Even you, Butler. Maybe even you, if you want to check it out.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'll at least check it out.
You're a creative type. I think you'd enjoy the process there. But yeah. Well, good. Well, what else is happening? Kids are growing up and, you know, doing that type of stuff and being a dad. How do you find that?
Man, it's interesting. It's hard to talk about what it's like being a dad without sounding trite, because all of the stuff you hear is true. It's the most exhausting and chaotic thing, but it's also the most rewarding thing. The tropes you hear about, you just really don't know what love is, or you just, how fulfilling it is to have a child, and care, like genuinely care for somebody so much more than you could ever care for yourself. And watching their little faces smile and light up when I come home is unexplainable. It's the greatest thing that I've ever experienced or felt. And if I don't do right by them, I've failed. I could be the most famous filmmaker. I could have a business worth billions of dollars. But if I'm at the end of my life a bad dad, I failed. That's just my own personal code, right? And it's hard to be somebody who's so ambitious and always wants to change, to slow down and say, wait a second, these kids, like my daughter's going to be in school soon. Before I know it, they'll be in college. If I don't appreciate the now, that's probably the lesson that has taken me the longest to learn and implement, is to enjoy the phase I'm at while I'm in it. If I had like one piece of life advice, that would be it. And my seeing my kids grow up so much faster than I could have ever thought has really made me realize how much I need to appreciate the present and to not be so future focused that I neglect the present, is what I've been telling myself. but yeah, being a dad and balancing all that, it takes a lot of skill, and it's all worth it. You know, it's all absolutely worth it.
Without a doubt, kids have a way of marking time with birthdays and graduations and being in elementary school, middle school, and now in high school in my case. And I smiled to myself a little bit when you said, yeah, the big smile is when you come home I felt like saying, well, they're not teenagers yet.
Right? I know. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I keep telling myself, you know, because like I'm not claiming to be a super virtuous person. I do my best. And
sure.
Sometimes, you know, with the questions that they ask nonstop and the wanting to, man, those kids have energy. I'm just like, how? Right. And I catch myself saying, not right now. I'll play another time. And I have to remind myself, one day I'm not going to be the center of the universe. One day they're going to rather play with their friends than play with me. And so I need to, no matter how tired I am, you know, get on the floor, play with the blocks or whatever, go outside and throw the ball around. Something, you know, sometimes it takes effort, you know, because it's exhausting.
Yeah, right on. And you can't get it back. And, you know, some of those other things that seem like priorities, you know, there'll be time. Mm-hmm. For that. And sometimes if just changing the mindset of thinking, I've got the time, it's gonna be all right. Yeah,
it will. One more thought on that is, you know, I've got toddlers, or my daughter, she's transitioning from toddler to child so much. But one thing about them is they will let you know if you were wrong, because they'll either ask you like, well, why does daddy get to do that? You know, or they'll mimic you, or you catch them doing a bad habit that you did. And it's like, so, oh man, like you're talking about having to be on your P's and Q's. Yeah. If you're involved with your children, they grow you up.
it's a humbling experience. My experience as well. Yeah. They become little mirrors, and they're sort of, I don't know what's the word, their feeling or their natural intuition of fairness is so incredible naturally that, you know, when anything is out of balance or unfair, mm-hmm. it's just, and there's no filter at that age, mm-hmm. right? It just comes full like a sledgehammer right against the forehead.
And yeah, it's black
sometimes you can't argue with that it's not fair, and it's a nice opportunity, perhaps, if the moment's correct, to explain how life is not quite fair all the time, and you know there needs to be some flexibility there, but it's. It's fun. It's interesting.
Yeah. We
have a good time.
I have a quick story that's somewhat related on that.
Sure. Yeah.
This is when my oldest kid was maybe about a year, and she was a little over two, and we're driving. She's incredibly perceptive. She asks about everything, and we're driving down the road, and she noticed that the car was stopping, and she asked me, why do we stop? And it was a red light. And I never realized how much of a mindless robot society will turn us into if it wasn't for my child asking me questions, because she just simply asked me the questions, why can't we go? And I, the only thought I could come up is, well, the light's red. If when it's green, I go. And I thought, man, I need to rethink how I say this, because I'm basically telling my children, we're just mindless robots. If that, I obey this light, you know? And so coming up with answers of the, instead of, I've gotten a little better at it. Instead of just giving these robot answers, I've learned how to articulate things to say, well, it's not our turn to go yet. We people have put up these lights to stop so that other people can go. And so we're waiting for them. So it's just kind of an interesting thought exercise to have to repackage what I'm saying to explain to a child in simple terms. And it's somehow helped me get a better grip on life. Like she's asked me questions about my faith. She's asked me questions about the world. And, you know, if you can explain something that we think is so complicated, you realize how simple it is really when you explain it to a child. So that's been a learning experience too.
Fantastic. Yeah, the depth of explanation, the reason behind the reason and what they can relate to, mm-hmm. and you know, taking turns if she's in preschool or getting into school, that's easily relatable, and that makes you a better person. That makes you a better communicator.
Oh, 100%. All the way around. Yeah.
right so yeah, kids make us better people for sure. And it's kind of interesting that when we were kids, you know, there was a lot of desire probably in your family as well as ours, to make our parents happy, to make them proud of us and stuff like that. And that just gets flipped right around, even though it's happening. The dynamic is happening in both ways. It gets flipped right around to, you know, make sure you keep things together so your kids are always proud of you as well. So, yeah, that's awesome. Great. So, and you're starting a new gig, I understand. Is that something that, did you just transition from one office as a contractor to another office, or do anything to say about that?
That was kind of. I'm basically starting off doing the same job that I was doing before, like you said, just working for a different company, and I'm in a different office. Instead of being for the Navy, I'm for the Air Force. Instead of Company A, it's Company B, in no particular order. Because
anybody the Navy's who's always first, come on, it's the Department of the Navy, the Marines, and then Air Force is somewhere down the line. Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you. So, like, budget wise, you know, Navy's up here, and then the Marines get whatever the Navy doesn't spend. So that's what I was used to. And then I went to the Navy. I am pretty excited about working in an Air Force office because they have this thing called money that I've heard about, and nice offices corporate offices. Well, I heard they have stand-up desks. I don't know if that's true, but so I am excited about that. But so anybody who's familiar with the government contracting world can relate. But for those that aren't, it's usually when you get hired on with a company, you get hired on for a specific role on a specific contract that they have budgeted for. So there's not as much wiggle room with you, like, negotiating salary as maybe there is out in the commercial industry. And then if that contract ends, or when it ends, the company will have to find another contract to put you on. Otherwise, your job could end with it. And that's just the nature of the beast. And smaller, a lot of contracting companies don't have the funds to keep you and not put you on another contract, even if they want to. The contracting company that I just left, that lost the contract, they're great. Some of the best people I've ever worked for. They had hearts of gold. They simply didn't have the resources, the overhead to keep me. And they just didn't have any other positions that I qualified for out here. So the company that I got hired on now, they're much bigger, and there's more security because they have the overhead to keep my salary in between contracts. So I started with a company that I could potentially retire from. And, you know, obviously until, like, Quentin Tarantino and Steven Spielberg, until they call me up and ask me to be on their next movie, until then I can stick with this company, and it's a really great company. So I'm happy to start this new gig, even though I'm starting off in the same function that I was before. There's potential for growth, and I've already talked to like my supervisors about you know, ways I can grow, further my education, maybe be an upper level management eventually. So there's a really good path ahead for me. So I'm excited about the podcast I'm starting. I'm excited about this new company and where I could go with it and what it means to, like, my family and everything. So it's a really good season for me. Lots of new starts.
Right on. Well, you certainly earned it, that's for sure. And it, you know, sort of winding it back to the purpose of this podcast too, great insight, right? For anybody getting out of the military, if they're going to work for military contractors, government contractors, understanding the difference between big and small and long and short and contract to contract and in, you know, the breadth of the operation. So if you're in a contract that ends and you have established yourself as a reliable, productive, smart person in the organization, then they'll likely find another spot for you to fit in. So you have some continuity, right? And you have some stability in your life. And unless you just, you know, enjoy bouncing around and having different experiences, there's nothing wrong with that. We've already covered that too. But also, it just, when you're getting out and you don't know, and, you know, you're like, okay, well, all I need is a job, and I've got Company A and Company B. This one's maybe provide me a little bit more, but less stability. This provide me a little less, but longer term stability, and weighing the options and seeing how that goes. So really, Really solid insight there. Thank you, Butler, for that.
Yeah.
Well, good. What else is going on? Anything else, updates from last time that you want to share with the Mobius Connect community? Got any car projects or housing projects that you're working on, or anything else in Hawaii? You learning to surf, or you know, do you already know how to surf?
No, I am weird in that I have not gone out to surf. My wife loves surfing, and she said she's going to teach me one day, but we're pretty jam packed with like the kids and the job and all that. It's hard to start new habits in this season. I will tell you, I've been putting a lot of stuff into learning, filmmaking, and, I feel happy when I'm being productive, like doing something that is, that I know is going to move me forward in life is something that really excites me. But as much as my productive, ambitious mind doesn't like to admit it, we need rest and we need to just relax, and recreation is very important. So I've actually been learning this past year how to be ambitious and do new things and work on my lifetime, like long-term goals, but also learning how to relax and just take some time for myself and enjoy myself in the moment. And it's okay to tell the kids that daddy needs a break. It's okay to go by myself. And so, I am a bit of a coffee snob, and that's to put it lightly. And I've been, I'm on like a, I don't know how many years journey of finding the best way to make good tasting quality coffee that wakes me up, but it's not too expensive and not too much of a hassle to make. And that might sound like, that just kind of shows when I get into something, I really get into it, and I got to figure out the best way. And then when I figure out and I get it all perfect and I figure out like a Venn diagram of taste, cost, and efficiency, then I can stick with it. Now I've got great coffee for the rest of my life. And that's how I approach food and all this. So I've,
there's good coffee in Hawaii for sure.
There is. And I've come to the conclusion that brewing it hot, like doing pour overs and things like that, it's so much work. It's a mess. And it's hot out here in Hawaii a lot. So I've actually recently learned how to make cold brew, and I'm experimenting. If you're not familiar with cold brew, it's different than iced coffee. It's actually brewed cold. So you steep the coffee in the water for 12 to 20 hours and you make either a concentrate or you drink it straight up. So, not as exciting as surfing, but it just shows, I guess, how much of a nerd I am. And I've really learned to, make use of my drive, because I live a little further from work than most people. It's like an hour drive both ways.
Yeah.
And, so I've been listening to podcasts, and I've been recently listening to audiobooks. And I'm for the first time, I'm reading my first adult fiction novel. The last time I read any sort of fiction novel was like when I was a kid. It was like kid stuff. So I'm like, I'm in the world of arts and entertainment and stuff like that. So saying I learned how to make coffee and I finally learned how to read a fiction book may sound silly, but for me, that's actually quite a milestone. Those are some big deal stuff, right? That I can sit down and not feel like I've got to work. I've got to make something. I've got to figure out what I'm going to do tomorrow. I can turn that off and just relax and enjoy the life I'm trying to live.
Well, yeah. And the core thread there is being able to slow it down, really, because I mean, if you're always thinking about the future, and you mentioned this in, I think, in your prior podcast, if you're always thinking about the future, you're never engaged in the present,
yeah.
Right? And you're not appreciating the moment, and that's all we've got, right? The string of moments from start to finish. So in the moments with a nice cup of coffee, whether it's hot or cold, are good moments to reflect upon. And I learned how to drink coffee in the Navy. I don't know if you drink it the same way I do, but there are no sissy options. Let's put it that way.
I call it frou-frou coffee.
We're trying to keep toxic masculinity out of the conversation, as my older daughter would tell me. That's toxic. But anyway, yeah, I take it black, and it's, I can tell the difference. And yeah, when you come up with that, you let us know, and we'll take part. That's awesome. And also, since my next adventure in life really is all around, on the underwater world and scuba diving and mm-hmm. you know, maintenance on gear and training and exploring new things. You've got a great place to try scuba diving out there in Hawaii.
Know. You know, one of my best friends was a Navy diver and enjoys scuba diving recreationally now that he's out. And that's something I want to get into. Scuba diving and sailing, I want to learn. But those are like skills that take some commitment, right? Maybe when my kids are a little bit older. Because I don't want to learn how to sail or learn how to scuba dive and then not do it again for 5 to 10 years, because I'd have to start over. So I do look forward to doing. I live in a perfect place for that, and I really want to do some of that. You live in, you said Tennessee, so, or was it Kentucky or Tennessee?
Central Kentucky, that's right.
Okay, my apologies.
And we usually travel, other than lakes and quarries where certification dives can happen or training dives, but usually travel to get to the places, nicer places where the water's warmer and clearer. And there
where you can see like more than a foot in front of you. That's how the water was when I grew up. And I want to ask you this. Maybe you could, as a scuba diver, I would be interested if you found this out. I know it's your podcast, but I'm going to ask you.
No, it's all good, man. Quid pro quo, right?
Yeah. Excuse me. I had heard there is this river that I grew up next to in Alabama, and they said that there was a river dam, and near the dam, they had these catfish that would just sit there and just eat the food when it came in, and that they were bigger than like a Volkswagen car. And I don't know if it was a rumor, but they said divers down there went one time and saw them. Is that something that you could find out for us and put to bed or actualize this myth? What's up?
I would love to do some more research on that. I will tell you that as a Navy diver myself, I went on one mission, which wasn't the happiest of missions after Space Shuttle Columbia blew up. Right over the Piney Woods of Texas and the Toledo Bend Reservoir. We were sent out as reserve divers. We teamed up with local sheriffs, fire departments. It's in the middle of nowhere, this place that was basically a man-made lake, and they had the 100-year rain halfway through the process, so there are houses and trees and cars and everything under the water. And talk about pitch black, my friend. I mean, pitch black. So we went, nice technology, very interesting technology on underwater sonar, really the methods of finding metallic objects, small metallic objects, and then sending dive teams down there and being able to communicate with topside. But before I went, I did some research on Toledo Bend Reservoir, and there are pictures of these fishermen holding these catfish, like full-grown men, 5 foot, 6 foot tall men, holding them up by their mouths, and the catfish goes all the way to the ground. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm gonna reach my hand out, try to find something like this, and this giant catfish is gonna whack me in the head, or you know, maybe take a bite. You know, it's a lot different mm-hmm. noodling a catfish when they're 6 feet long than
yeah.
when
that's
they're
something you're
not
gonna catch
long.
Me doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm based on that experience, I'm pretty sure that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But I will do some more research and I will report back to you on that.
I appreciate it. Sure.
Probably won't find him in Hawaii, but there's a lot of other things to contend with in Hawaii. And certainly if we get out there to do any scuba diving, it'll be a big trip from Kentucky, but I'll be sure to look you up and maybe
please.
Can have an iced coffee or a cold coffee, cold brewed coffee mm-hmm. Together. To
that would be great.
Close the loop. Yeah. Yeah. That would be awesome. Be awesome. All right, my friend. Well, we are coming up to the end of our hour. I want to be respectful for your time. And is there anything else that you wanted to relate to our listeners here before we go into the final phase of the podcast?
No. I just say, you know, feel free to check out my site, Cops versus Ninjas, if you're interested in the stuff we talked about. And don't just remember that I think I said it last time in my closing message that we're not alone. Find community if you don't have community. And yeah, thanks for listening, man. This was, I love doing these. So I appreciate you asking me to come back on.
Yeah. I enjoy talking to you too. And I enjoy doing this and getting getting back after my own season of struggle, and you know, it's all good. And we are a community, and we don't do it alone. And nobody should think that they have to do it alone, right? Because there are plenty of people who want to help, and
absolutely,
and all that. So, all right, Butler. So, how can people get a hold of you if they want to learn more? Is it through the website, Cops vs. Ninja, or what would you? You had another website, didn't you? Sprinting marathons or something like that?
Yeah, the iSprint Marathons, that was the one I plugged last time, because that was like my kind of placeholder brand name, because I hadn't thought of what I was going to really charge forward with. So yeah, that would be the best way. And my email is on the site too. So yeah, just copsvsninjas.com. That would be the appreciated way. And yeah, so thanks for asking.
Yeah, very good. Very good. So before we close out, I'd like to give a couple short notes to our listeners. First off, I want to personally invite you to join us in Milwaukee in September of 2025, the 8th and the 9th, for Mobius Connect Live. It's a one-of-a-kind event packed with real-world applications and valuable connections with fellow CVM practitioners and reliability professionals. I'll be hosting a special live episode of Veterans Connected at the event. This is a unique opportunity for us to come together, share stories, learn from each other, and dig into what it means to be a veteran in today's industry. So mark your calendars and register now. Can't wait to see you there in Milwaukee. Secondly, to round out our show, we're seeking more female veterans as well as recently transitioned vets. If you know former service members that would be interested in telling their stories, send them our way. Send your Navy diver buddy my way, Butler. So, and finally, thank you, Butler, and thank you, Mobius, for providing this platform to help both transitioning vets as well as those looking to hire them in the field of maintenance and reliability. And that's all. Belvivino out. Thanks, my friend.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Veterans Connected. We will see you back for another episode very soon. In between, we hope to see you in the Veterans Connected community group, where you can meet Eric and fellow podcast guests and share with other industry veterans at MobiusConnect.com. And we hope to see you there.